The following audiobook contains AI-generated content and may contain errors. MyAudiobooks.ai presents Boston Weather Forecasts, Reading Air Masses, Fronts, and Storm Tracks, Topic Introduction. Before sunrise on a damp Boston morning, the city is still mostly dark, but the weather is already negotiating its next move. At the National Weather Service office in Norton, Massachusetts, a forecaster studies a low-pressure system sliding along the coastline. On one screen, radar shows bands of moisture curling north. On another, model guidance suggests that a tiny change in track could decide whether the commute begins with rain, sleet, or wet snow. A few miles inland, that same shift may mean colder roads and a very different day. Along the harbor, the wind feels like a message from elsewhere. The Atlantic is still feeding moisture inland, while colder air from New England waits just beyond the city limits. This is what weather forecasting often becomes in the Boston area. It is not a simple yes or no, but a translation of what the atmosphere is doing right now and what it is likely to do next. Boston sits at a coastal crossroads. To the east lies the Atlantic, a steady source of moisture and moderation. To the north and west are inland New England and Canada, where colder, drier air often builds when the larger pattern allows it. To the south and southwest, warmer and more humid air can surge northward. The result is a region where a small wind shift can change the feel of a day, the kind of clouds overhead, and even whether precipitation falls as rain or snow. The language forecasters use can sound compact, even cryptic at first glance. An air mass is a large body of air with similar temperature and humidity. A front is the boundary where one air mass meets another. A storm track is the path a low-pressure system follows as it moves. A frontal passage is the moment that boundary crosses the area and the air behind it begins to take over. These terms sound technical because they are, but they are also the fastest way to describe what people actually experience outdoors. That is the central puzzle at the heart of this audiobook. How can a few lines in a forecast carry so much information about pressure, lift, wind, cloud layers, and timing? Why does one sentence promise scattered showers while another warns of freezing rain, gusty northeast winds, or a sharp temperature drop after a front passes? And how does a listener learn to hear the difference between a forecast that merely names weather and one that explains it? Four institutions help anchor that story. The National Weather Service office serving eastern New England from Norton, the Climate Prediction Center, the Blue Hill Observatory and Science Center, and the forecast offices in Philadelphia and Mount Holly all appear in this larger picture. In early 2026, the Philadelphia and Mount Holly office announces a revised area forecast discussion structure designed to surface key messages, hazards, and impacts more clearly. That change matters because the area forecast discussion, the long-form explanation behind the forecast, has always been where the reasoning lives. It is the place where radar, satellite images, surface observations, weather balloons, and computer models are woven into a single account of why the forecast looks the way it does. That effort toward clarity matters because people do not live inside model output. They live through rush hour, school pickup, airport delays, shoreline flooding, and the uneasy question of whether a winter storm will fall as snow or turn to rain. A warm spell can feel extraordinary, as it did when Boston reached 96 degrees Fahrenheit on May 15, 2025. A holiday outlook can feel equally consequential, as when a late December forecast for southern New England weighs a white Christmas inland against a rainier coast. These are not abstract exercises. They are moments when the atmosphere reaches directly into daily life. Behind the public forecast sits a deeper structure. Pressure is the hidden grammar. High pressure usually means sinking air, drier conditions, and a steadier sky. Low pressure usually means rising air, cloud growth, and a greater chance of precipitation. Add moisture and lift, and the atmosphere begins to organize rain, snow, drizzle, or thunderstorms. Add a strong temperature contrast, and the boundary between air masses becomes a front that can change the day almost by hour. In other words, the forecast is not just a list of conditions, it is a story about how the atmosphere is arranged, and how that arrangement is changing. Along the way, this audiobook will define the recurring terms that matter most. Probability of precipitation is one of them, and it means the chance of measurable precipitation at a specific place during a specific time window. It does not mean rain for a certain percentage of the day, and it does not mean the same thing as how much of an area gets wet. Those distinctions are important because uncertainty is not a flaw in forecasting. It is part of the forecast itself, especially in a place where the rain-snow line can move with only a small change in storm track. Boston is an especially useful lens for this kind of reading because local geography amplifies small atmospheric shifts. The coast can hold onto marine influence long after inland towns begin to dry out. A northeast wind can signal an onshore setup and cooler air. A southwest wind can point toward warmer, more humid conditions. A low tracking just offshore can keep the city cold enough for snow, while a slightly inland path can bring warmer air and a messy mix. The difference may be only a few miles on a map, but it can feel like two different worlds at ground level. This audiobook follows that chain from the broadest patterns to the local consequences. It moves through air masses, fronts, coastal lows, nor'easters, winter mixing, cloud ceilings, gusty winds, seasonal outlooks, and the timing cues that turn jargon into a usable mental picture. It also shows why forecasters care so much about how they communicate, because the right words can make the sky legible in a way that raw numbers never quite do. By the end, the listener will understand why a forecast feels most trustworthy when it can be tested against the sky itself. Clouds thicken, winds turn, pressure falls or rises. The atmosphere offers its own confirmation. Long before a model finishes running, the sky has already begun to explain the next few hours. Learning to hear that explanation is the real invitation here. End of introduction. The National Weather Service Area Forecast Discussion Format change announced by the Philadelphia and Mount Holly office on January 6, 2026, aims to surface key messages, hazards, and impacts more clearly, so readers do not have to wade through dense diagnostics to find the practical meaning of a forecast. Checking the morning weather often means decoding a compact string of words. A forecast may say cloudy skies, a 30% chance of late afternoon showers, northeast winds, and temperatures falling by evening. It can sound like a simple schedule of events. In reality, it is a compressed explanation of what air is arriving, how pressure is changing, and whether moisture has a path to rise and condense. A good forecast reads less like a promise and more like a short story about the sky. Boston is a useful place to learn that language because the city sits at a coastal crossroads. To the east is the Atlantic, which keeps feeding moisture and moderating temperatures. To the north and west are inland New England and Canada, where colder air often builds when broad weather patterns allow it. To the south and southwest are warmer, more humid air masses that can push north when the winds and the pressure pattern align. Those boundaries matter. A small shift in wind direction can change whether a Boston area day feels crisp and dry, damp and raw, or wet enough for rain versus snow. The region also sits under storm tracks that can pull coastal lows up the shoreline, sending ocean moisture into colder air over land. That is why two places that sit close on a map can end up with very different weather. To make sense of a forecast, three basic questions do most of the work. What air is arriving, where pressure is moving, and how moisture is being lifted. Air masses carry their own temperature and humidity. Pressure tells whether the atmosphere is setting up a steadier pattern or one that favors motion and change. Lift is the mechanism that turns invisible water vapor into clouds and, eventually, precipitation. Once those three pieces come together, the rest of the forecast vocabulary becomes much less mysterious. That vocabulary is not a pile of unrelated terms. It is a daily lexicon that describes how the atmosphere is behaving above the ground. When a forecast mentions showers, it usually signals precipitation that starts and stops, often in uneven bursts. Rain is different when it is steady and widespread, falling for longer stretches and covering more of the area. Drizzle is even finer, made of tiny droplets that often point to a shallow, moist layer near the surface with weak upward motion. Those distinctions matter because they describe not just what is falling, but the vertical structure that produces it. Cold weather terms follow the same idea. The forecast is hinting at the temperature profile through the atmosphere. Snow falls when the air from cloud to ground stays cold enough that flakes do not melt on the way down. Sleet forms when snow melts in a warm layer aloft, then refreezes into small ice pellets before reaching the ground. Freezing rain is more deceptive. It falls as liquid through a warm layer, then freezes on contact with cold pavement, trees, or wires. Thunderstorms are different again. They are driven by strong rising air and can bring lightning, heavy rain, and gusty winds in a short time. In other words, each word points to the vertical temperatures and the kind of lift happening overhead. Forecasts also use spatial language to describe how uneven the weather may be across the region. Isolated showers usually means only a few spots get hit. Scattered suggests more places see rain, but dry gaps remain likely. Patchy often signals something broken and localized, such as fog or drizzle that appears in pockets rather than covering everything. Widespread implies most of the area is likely affected, with only a few breaks. These words matter because they shape expectations for whether a neighborhood nuisance is likely or whether a broader washout is on the way. Timing phrases carry similar weight. Early and late point to where the main action sits inside the forecast window. Through the day and overnight describe longer, more continuous periods. Toward evening suggests the change is likely to arrive as daylight fades. After frontal passage signals that the shift follows a boundary moving through the area, often with a clear change in wind and temperature. For planning, those phrases can matter as much as precipitation type, because a shower at breakfast creates different problems than showers arriving after dark. Intensity words translate the atmosphere into something people can feel. Light, moderate, and heavy describe how hard rain or snow is falling. Breezy and gusty describe wind that stands out, with stronger bursts mixed in. Calm points to air that is nearly still. These are not just style choices. They are a way of connecting the forecast language to everyday experiences, like driving over a bridge, waiting for a school bus, or checking whether tree limbs are at risk. One of the most misunderstood parts of a forecast is the probability of precipitation. A 30% chance of rain does not mean precipitation will occur for 30% of the day. It does not mean 30% of the area will get wet. In typical point-based forecasting, it means the likelihood that measurable precipitation will occur at a given location within the stated time window. That number reflects uncertainty and how confident forecasters are in where the precipitation will go. If confidence is high, but the system affects only a narrow corridor, the chance at any one point can still look modest. If confidence is lower, but the storm could cover more ground, the percentage can look similar. The figure bundles uncertainty and spatial coverage into a single phrase, which is useful, but easy to misread without the context behind it. Seasonal outlooks use different language because the time scale is different. They usually do not forecast a specific Tuesday rainstorm or a particular weekend of snow. Instead, they compare an upcoming 3-month period with a long historical baseline, often using probability language across categories. Above normal means there is a higher probability that temperatures or precipitation fall into the warmest or wettest third of the record. Below normal points toward the coldest or driest third. Equal chances means the signals are weak enough that no category has a clear edge. The phrase wetter than normal works the same way for precipitation only, not for temperature. And it tilts the odds toward more precipitation than the climatological middle without guaranteeing a continuously soaked season. That kind of seasonal framing appeared in the United States Winter Outlook for December 2024 through February 2025, released by the Climate Prediction Center on November 21, 2024. It anticipated La Niña conditions and favored warmer-than-average odds for New England. For Boston-area audiences, that matters because seasonal guidance is one of the first places where local expectations connect to broader ocean and atmospheric patterns far from Massachusetts. A seasonal map does not decide the day-by-day weather. It sets the statistical background that helps explain why certain patterns may become more likely as winter approaches. Behind the vocabulary sits a deeper idea that ties many forecast phrases together: atmospheric pressure. Air has mass, so it presses down on the surface. At sea level, the standard reference pressure is about 1,013.25 millibars. And real-world pressure rises and falls as weather systems move through. High pressure and low pressure are not just labels on charts. They describe the basic motion of the atmosphere. In high pressure, air tends to sink. As it sinks, it warms and dries, which makes it harder for clouds to grow. That is why high pressure often brings steadier weather and clearer skies. In low pressure, air tends to rise. As it rises, it expands and cools. Cooler air cannot hold as much water vapor, so moisture condenses into cloud droplets or ice crystals, making low pressure far more likely to bring clouds and precipitation. A simple weather rule follows from that. Rising air helps storms grow, and sinking air helps them weaken. Air also moves to reduce pressure differences, and that movement is wind. When pressure changes sharply over a short distance, the pressure gradient is steep and winds strengthen. That is one reason coastal storms can produce strong gusts. Even before rainfall starts, the wind direction can signal that a new air mass has taken control. In Boston, a switch from a warm southwesterly flow to a cool northeast wind often aligns with a frontal boundary moving through or a new system taking over. That wind change is frequently followed by a quick drop in temperature, a rise in humidity, or both. The air felt outdoors is no longer the same air that was there an hour earlier. Clouds often mirror those changes. When warm, moist air is forced upward over a colder layer, clouds can begin to build from the top down and thicken. Cirrus clouds made of ice crystals can appear first. As lift strengthens, the cloud deck often thickens into layers, such as altostratus, and the ceiling lowers as the lowest cloud layer comes closer to the ground. The clouds also lose their delicate, wispy texture and begin to look darker and more uniform. The rain or snow is not appearing from nowhere. It is being prepared by lift above. In New England, geography can sharpen the signal because the Boston region often sits near the boundary between ocean-influenced air and colder inland air. That is why storm tracks that are only a short distance apart can produce rain in one area and snow farther inland. A forecast phrase can sound identical across locations, but the temperature structure and the path of the low can decide whether precipitation stays liquid, freezes, or falls as snow. The National Weather Service office that serves eastern Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and parts of New Hampshire and Connecticut is physically located in Norton, Massachusetts. That forecast center builds daily guidance around radar, satellite images, surface observations, and computer models, and it issues warnings when needed. Its most detailed public product is the Area Forecast Discussion, which explains why the forecast looks the way it does. As the broader AFD format initiative rolls into early 2026, the structure is shifting to make key messages and impacts easier to locate, rather than burying the useful part inside a wall of model detail. Even so, those discussions can include technical material. Forecasters may cite temperatures near the 925 millibar level, roughly 3,000 feet up, to explain why surface conditions will feel unusually cold or why wind shifts as a front passes. The communication style is changing, but the physics remains the physics. The goal is simply to bring the practical meaning to the surface first, while keeping enough technical context for those who want to dig deeper. Once the vocabulary is learned, a forecast stops sounding like disconnected terms. It becomes a story of pressure, wind, moisture, timing, and local geography working together. That is the real listening skill, and it sets up the next step, seeing how air masses, fronts, and storm tracks interact inside specific weather systems rather than in abstract definitions. In May 2025, local reporting described Boston reaching 96 degrees Fahrenheit on May 15th. Breaking the previous record high of 90 degrees set in 2017. In December 22, 2025, the Blue Hill Observatory and Science Center issued a White Christmas Outlook for southern New England. Together, those two documents bookend a useful lesson for interpreting forecasts. The words about fronts, air, and precipitation are shorthand for a sequence you can often feel happening to the ground truth. To understand how weather unfolds across a landscape, start with the broad pools of air that drift across the continent. These are air masses, large regions of the lower atmosphere where temperature and moisture stay fairly uniform over hundreds of kilometers. An air mass gets its character from the land or water below it, its source region, and then it slowly changes as it moves. Dry air crossing sunny plains can warm and mix more deeply. Moist air moving off the Atlantic can pick up additional dampness and soften the feel of the day. in New England, that moving mix of air masses is the raw material of daily weather. Forecasters group these air masses into practical categories because the labels predict how the day will feel at the surface. Continental polar air comes down from northern Canada and the interior of the continent, bringing dry, chilly conditions in autumn and bitter cold in winter. Maritime tropical air arrives from the Gulf of Mexico and adjacent warm waters and often feeds muggy summer heat. Maritime polar air moves in from the colder northern Atlantic, and in the Boston area, it often means damp, raw conditions, fog, or low clouds. Those categories are not just vocabulary. They are shorthand for the background temperature, humidity, and comfort level you will likely notice outdoors. Air masses do not simply blend when they meet. They clash along fronts, which are active boundaries where contrasting air masses collide and lifting begins. Cold air is denser than warm air, so it behaves like a wedge and pushes under the warmer air. That upward motion helps start cloud formation and precipitation because rising air cools, water vapor condenses, and clouds thicken into rain or snow depending on the temperature profile. A front is not only a line on a map, it is a moving zone of transition where the atmosphere rearranges itself. A cold front forms when colder air advances and undercuts warmer air. The slope is steeper than it is at a warm front, so lifting can be abrupt. That is why cold fronts often bring a quick wind shift, a sharper temperature drop, and a narrow band of active weather. In favorable conditions, the line can also produce thunderstorms, sometimes in bursts that are short-lived but intense. In New England, a warm, sticky afternoon can end with a front passage and a much cooler evening, sometimes within a few hours, because the colder air mass is physically replacing what was there before. A warm front marks the leading edge of advancing warmer air. Warm air cannot easily shove cold air out of the way, so it glides up and over the colder air along a gentler slope. That slower ascent gives warm fronts a longer lead time in the forecast. Clouds usually lower in stages as the front approaches, often starting with thin, higher clouds, then thickening into layers, and then dropping toward the ground as precipitation becomes more likely. Warm frontal precipitation often lasts longer than cold frontal rain and is more likely to be steady and widespread because the atmosphere is being lifted over a larger area rather than slammed upward in one burst. When neither air mass can displace the other, the boundary stalls and becomes a stationary front. Stalled patterns can keep one region under gray, unsettled weather for a long stretch, because moisture keeps rising along the same lingering line. In practice, this can mean days of clouds, drizzle, or repeated showers, if the larger setup continues feeding the boundary. A stationary front is a useful reminder that the label alone does not tell the whole story. Movement, available moisture, and the amount of lift all control how much weather you actually get. In a mature storm system, a cold front can eventually catch up to a warm front, creating an occluded front. Occlusion wraps the boundaries together near the storm center as the system evolves. In many cases, occlusion signals that the storm is becoming less efficiently fueled by surface warm air, so it can begin to weaken after peaking, even though the weather can stay messy for a while. Occluded systems can blend the more persistent precipitation of a warm front with the wind shifts and squalls associated with cold fronts, which is why they often feel unsettled rather than neatly divided into rain then clearing. It is tempting to think a front label alone determines whether a storm will be dramatic, but the real answer comes down to two things: how strong the lift is and how much moisture is available. A strong cold front moving through dry air may produce little more than a band of clouds, a pressure change, and a wind shift. A weaker front tapping deeper tropical moisture can turn into a heavy rain threat or thunderstorms. The label matters, but the mechanism matters more. You can follow a frontal passage as a sequence you can often recognize. Ahead of the boundary, clouds usually arrive first, often thin and high, then thickening and lowering. Pressure then begins to fall, and winds shift as the atmosphere adjusts to the approaching line. Precipitation follows, sometimes as a narrower band and sometimes as a broader shield. After passage, pressure rises again, winds turn once more, and the sky either clears or transitions into a new air mass that feels colder and drier. This sequence is one of the most useful patterns for turning forecast wording into a timeline you can picture. A concrete example shows how that timeline reads in real life. During the record heat on May 15, 2025, Boston reached 96 degrees Fahrenheit, surpassing the previous record of 90 degrees set in 2017. That kind of heat is not only a number, it typically means a warm, often more humid air mass has pushed unusually far north. The second half of the story is what happens when a cold front arrives and interrupts that air mass. As the cold front approached from the northwest, it ran into hot, humid air over the region and triggered scattered downpours and thunderstorms. Once the boundary moved offshore, the winds shifted from southwest toward northwest, and cooler, drier air filtered in behind it, creating the classic cold front replacement pattern. In that same reporting, the convective threat was described as low-end severe rather than a high-end outbreak, with the main concerns being isolated gusty winds and small hail. And the timing emphasis landed on the window between 3 in the afternoon and 10 at night. Geography shapes how those fronts feel, especially for a coastal city. Along the Atlantic, the ocean moderates temperature swings, and when the ocean is still relatively cool in spring, a cold front crossing Boston may feel less abrupt than the same front farther inland. Inland New England more often sees a cleaner break in the sky, a faster drop in humidity, and a more obvious wind shift. That is why Boston forecasts work best when paired with a mental map of where maritime influence dominates and where inland air gets a stronger foothold. The same boundary can deliver different ground truth within a short drive. Clouds also give away the structure if you know how to read them. Thick, layered cloud decks that block the sun often point to sustained lift over a broad area. That frequently happens ahead of a warm front or around a coastal low where moisture is being lifted through a deeper column of the atmosphere. The clouds tend to build slowly and persist, which matches why warm frontal precipitation and coastal precipitation shields often last longer. When the sky shifts from thin high clouds to a solid gray ceiling that keeps lowering, the atmosphere is often telling you that widespread lift is already underway. Puffy clouds and quicker changes, on the other hand, suggest instability and more localized lift. Cumulus clouds grow when warm air near the surface rises in pockets. If the air is unstable enough, those towers can develop into cumulonimbus and produce scattered showers or thunderstorms. That lift is different from the broad, layered ascent of a warm front. It is more compartmentalized, so one part of the region may turn showery or stormy, while nearby towns stay dry. Timing cues can also come from cloud ceilings. Ahead of a warm front, ceilings often lower in a recognizable progression over something like 12 to 24 hours, often starting with cirrus, then thickening into altostratus, and then dropping toward lower rain-producing layers. A cold front compresses that timeline. Ceilings can fall more quickly as the boundary mirrors, especially if the front sharpens and produces storms along it. Coastal lows can produce a similar effect, with moisture pulled off the Atlantic and ceilings lowering rapidly as the storm organizes near the shoreline. A storm is not simply rain or wind or snow on its own. It is an integrated system that organizes low pressure, winds, lift, temperature contrast, and moisture into one moving structure. The low pressure center acts like an engine, drawing air inward and then forcing rising motion, because the air cannot pile up at the surface forever. That rising motion generates the lift that produces clouds and precipitation. The path of that low is called the storm track, and for New England, it is often one of the biggest reasons forecasts feel so sensitive. Small track changes can shift the outcome for Boston. One track may place the city in the warmer sector where rain is more likely, while another keeps Boston on the colder side where snow, sleet, or freezing rain becomes more probable. The same storm can produce heavy snow in one town and plain rain a short drive away because the dividing line is tied to the storm's position and the temperature structure around it. That is why forecasters watch storm tracks closely. The center of the storm is not only a dot on a chart, its location helps decide whether neighborhoods get snow, sleet, freezing rain, or wind-driven rain. In New England, the difference between a coastal low and an inland low matters in a very practical way. An inland low tracks west of Boston, often toward the Connecticut River Valley or through northern New York. In that setup, warm, moist air can be drawn inland, and temperatures along the coast often rise above freezing. For Boston, that usually shifts precipitation toward rain, with the better snow accumulating farther north and west. A coastal low behaves differently. When the low tracks just off the coast of southern New England, Boston often stays on the colder side of the system. That allows freezing temperatures to hold, while ocean moisture feeds heavy, wet snow. These systems can deepen quickly because they sit near a strong temperature contrast between cold continental air and warmer Atlantic water. One detailed example illustrates the track lesson for winter precipitation. On December 22, 2025, the Blue Hill Observatory and Science Center issued a White Christmas outlook centered on a low-pressure system moving toward northern New England, a track that often reduces the odds of a clean all-snow event in southern New England. The outlook indicated better chances for at least a thin Christmas covering in interior areas, with estimated accumulations around 1 to 3 inches along and northwest of the Interstate 95 corridor, in Massachusetts and Rhode Island and across Connecticut. Closer to the coast, including Cape Cod and the islands, confidence was lower and precipitation was more likely to fall as rain. The outlook also noted that after the main system passes, cold air moving over relatively warm ocean water could produce weak ocean effect snow showers on Cape Cod. This is a localized effect that can generate narrow bands of snow downwind even after the primary storm has moved on. Winter storms in the region are also often shaped by nor'easters, east coast systems known for strong northeast winds that drive into coastal New England. Educational materials from the National Weather Service describe nor'easters as storms that form along the U.S. east coast, typically within about 100 miles east or west of the coastline between New Jersey and Georgia, and that produce strong northeast winds over coastal New England. They arise when cold air, often originating in Canada and channeled southward and eastward by the polar jet stream, moves over relatively warm Atlantic waters. The resulting temperature contrast supports the formation and intensification of low pressure, cloud development, and strong winds. Nor'easters can bring heavy snow, blizzard conditions, heavy rain, and coastal flooding, and damaging waves that contribute to erosion and property damage. And they are most common and intense between September and April. When those storms mature, the combination of wind and water along the shoreline can be as important as the precipitation itself. Cloud physics and temperature layers help explain why one winter storm produces snow while another produces ice. The precipitation type depends on the vertical temperature profile between the cloud and the ground. If the whole column stays below freezing, snow can reach the surface as snow. If snow falls through a warm layer aloft, melts, and then encounters a deep sub-freezing layer near the surface, it can refreeze into sleet. If the warm layer is deep enough to melt the snow completely, but the cold near the surface is shallow, drops can remain liquid until they hit a freezing surface and then freeze on contact as freezing rain. This is often the most treacherous outcome because even a thin glaze can make roads, sidewalks, and elevated surfaces dangerously slick. Road conditions depend on more than air temperature at eye level. Pavement can stay colder or warmer than the air based on what arrived before. Rain falling onto ground that has been locked below freezing for days can freeze on contact. Snow falling onto warmer pavement may melt briefly and then refreeze when temperatures drop again, sometimes after sunset. That is why winter forecasts pay such close attention to timing. A few hours can decide whether travel ends up wet, slushy, icy, or simply messy. In forecast discussions, especially from the National Weather Service, repeated shower chances often connect to shortwave disturbances and surface boundaries. A shortwave is a ripple in the upper-level wind pattern that can create localized lift. A surface boundary can be a weak front or a lingering zone of contrast near the ground. When those features line up, multiple rounds of showers or thunderstorms can develop even without a dominant storm center overhead. The atmosphere stays active in ways that go beyond the simplest icon on a forecast tile. And that is why those technical phrases matter when they show up in public-facing reasoning. Once these building blocks are in place, weather stops looking like disconnected symbols and starts looking like a moving structure made of air masses, fronts, cloud layers, and storm tracks. The forecast becomes a story about what air is arriving, what is being lifted, where the low is traveling, and how local geography shapes what actually falls and how it lands at the surface. That is the point where the rest of the picture becomes useful, because the same moving atmosphere is what forecasters try to capture with models, satellite data, and the evolving guidance that drives daily forecast discussions. On January 6, 2026, the National Weather Service Philadelphia and Mount Holly office announced a revised area forecast discussion structure designed to surface key messages, hazards, and impacts more clearly. That change matters for how a forecast gets understood, because it encourages the same habit meteorology teams have always relied on. The sky rarely changes all at once, and the most useful way to read a morning forecast is to treat it as a compressed explanation that can be unpacked in a few careful passes. The first pass asks, what is driving the day? A forecast may be organized around high pressure, which tends to favor steadier weather and clearer skies, or around low pressure, which more often supports cloud growth and precipitation through rising motion. A front can be close enough that the day's main story is about change, not just conditions. Sometimes the surface map looks calm, but an upper-level disturbance is providing lift higher up, which can still generate clouds or showers. Reading for that driver is the grammar that makes later details connect instead of piling up. The pressure pass follows because pressure is the atmosphere's direction signal. Falling pressure usually points toward an approaching or intensifying system, and the practical outcomes often follow suit. Clouds thicken, winds freshen, and precipitation chances rise. Rising pressure more often arrives with drying air, improving visibility and clearing that can spread from one horizon to another. Just as important is how quickly pressure changes over distance, because sharper gradients strengthen the wind even before rain or snow begins. In Boston, where coastal exposure turns wind direction into lived experience, this pass gives an immediate feel for whether the day will seem calm, biting, or unsettled. The front pass turns those pressure cues into a timeline. An approaching front signals that the atmosphere is still building toward the change, so clouds may arrive in stages, and the air mass is transitioning. A passing front is the pivot point, when the wind direction shifts and temperature and moisture often follow in a noticeable sequence. A stalled front tells a different story, because when the boundary lingers, the weather can linger too, with repeated rounds of clouds, drizzle, or showers along the same corridor. A departed front changes the question from what is arriving to what is now in control, meaning the rest of the day belongs to the air mass behind the boundary. The moisture pass looks for supply as well as lift. Even when a forecast talks about fronts and rising motion, precipitation depends on whether moisture is actually present in the right layers. Dry air can allow a boundary to move through with little more than a wind shift and a cloud band. Humid air can prime the system for low clouds, fog, steadier rain, or summer thunderstorms, but it still needs a lift mechanism to move that moisture upward. Boston's location beside the ocean makes this supply question especially practical, because air flowing off the Atlantic often arrives with both moisture and a cooling influence near the surface. The next step is the probability pass, and it is where many forecasts get misread. Probability of precipitation describes the chance of measurable precipitation at a given point during the stated time window, not a guarantee that rain covers a fraction of the day or a percentage of the region. Confidence language addresses how stable the forecast explanation is, given uncertainties in timing and track, especially when sensitive boundaries such as the rain-snow line can shift with small changes. A forecast can pair a modest rain chance with high confidence, or a similar chance with lower confidence. The first case suggests a narrower corridor, while the second suggests the atmosphere could still reorganize in more than one plausible way. That difference is the real meaning of uncertainty, and it helps separate caution from vagueness. To make that probability feel grounded, the routine ends with a local confirmation pass, using the sky as the feedback loop. High clouds that thicken can confirm that lift is arriving from farther upstream. A lowering ceiling and an onshore damp breeze can confirm an approaching warm front or coastal setup, where moisture is being held near the ground. A sharp wind shift with falling temperatures often confirms frontal passage and the replacement of one air mass by another. Even the first drops or flakes matter, because they test whether the vertical temperature structure is behaving as expected, not just whether precipitation is due. In effect, the forecast becomes falsifiable. The atmosphere is either matching the chain of reasoning or forcing a different one. Those passes also connect to Boston's recurring spatial patterns. Along the coast, marine influence often changes temperature more slowly than inland, so timing and precipitation type can hinge on small geography. Fog and drizzle commonly show up with onshore flow when moist air moves over a cooler nearshore layer or a shallow cool layer at the surface. After some winter storms, cold air moving over relatively warmer ocean water can support narrow ocean effect snow showers, particularly downwind toward Cape Cod. Inland, conformation cues often arrive faster after a front passes because the ocean influence weakens and the post-frontal air can feel more decisive, with quicker clearing and sharper nighttime cooling. A coastal low near Boston is one of the clearest situations for practicing the full routine because each pass has an obvious target. The system pass identifies a low-pressure center traveling near the coast. Pressure and wind often fit a pattern of falling pressure ahead of the storm and a tighter gradient that supports steady northeast winds. Moisture is usually present because the Atlantic is feeding the setup. The front pass matters because Boston can sit close to a coastal boundary or near the rain-snow line, where small track differences can change whether precipitation stays solid, mixes, or becomes liquid. In these cases, forecast uncertainty is not just about whether clouds will appear, but about where the temperature profile ends up and which neighborhoods experience the most persistent precipitation. Coastal impacts, such as reduced visibility and rough surf, are also often tied to this system with supply and lift picture, not to precipitation type alone. That rain-snow line is why coastal lows can feel more sensitive than people expect. A modest shift of a low's path can pull warmer marine air inland enough to turn snow to rain closer to the city, while towns a bit farther north or west remain cold enough for accumulation. Keep the track farther offshore and colder air can hold longer, improving the odds for wet snow in Boston. The main point is not that every coastal low becomes a winter disaster, but that the storm's path controls the temperature structure, and the temperature structure controls what falls. The pattern looks different when unusual warmth is involved, because the day is organized around a frontal interruption. Local reporting for Boston's record heat on May 15, 2025, described a high of 96 degrees Fahrenheit, surpassing a previous record high of 90 degrees Fahrenheit set in 2017. The practical forecast logic for that kind of setup is a sequence. The day starts under a hot, humid air mass, then a cold front later in the day brings scattered downpours and thunderstorms, most likely between 3 in the afternoon and 10 at night, before ushering in cooler, drier air. In other words, forecast language such as scattered storms and cooler, drier air behind the front is a compressed timeline. Warm fronts tend to follow a slower, layered script. They often announce themselves with lowering cloud decks long before the air mass meaningfully changes at the surface. Because warm air glides over colder, near-surface conditions rather than shoving it out of the way, precipitation can begin as light rain or drizzle and persist while temperatures lag. Near Boston, this can mean hours of gray sky and dampness, with the more noticeable warming arriving only after the front fully passes, and sometimes less dramatic warming along the coast than inland. Summer daytime convection follows yet another script tied to the heating cycle. When a forecast discussion includes diurnal showers or diurnal thunderstorms, it is describing weather that depends on daytime heating rather than a single all-day forcing system. Sunshine warms the ground, the air near the surface becomes more buoyant, And if humidity and instability are sufficient, rising pockets can build clouds upward through the afternoon. That is why the lived outcome can vary dramatically block by block at the same time of day, with one neighborhood getting downpours and lightning, while nearby areas stay dry. Winter mixing rewards careful reading because a few degrees in a few layers can decide the precipitation type. These setups can start with snow, switch to sleet, shift toward freezing rain, and then transition to plain rain if warmer air moves in aloft while colder air stays trapped near the surface. Inland areas can hold snow longer, while coastal areas can pivot earlier into mixing because shallow marine influence is enough to alter the surface type. Forecast uncertainty often concentrates in those narrow temperature margins, which is why forecasts can sound firm about mixed precipitation even when exact timing still varies. The Christmas period of 2025 offered an example of how forecast language can reflect coastal sensitivity. On December 22, 2025, the Blue Hill Observatory and Science Center issued a white Christmas outlook for southern New England, built around a low-pressure system tracking toward northern New England. That track was often unfavorable for an all-snow event near the coast, but the outlook still described a fairly high probability of at least a thin snow cover in interior areas. It also estimated accumulations of about 1 to 3 inches along and northwest of the Interstate 95 corridor in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and across Connecticut. Near Cape Cod and the islands, confidence was lower and precipitation was more likely to fall as rain. The outlook also noted that after the main system passes, cold air moving over relatively warm ocean water could support weak ocean effect snow showers on Cape Cod into the next day. That kind of local narrow band consequence shows why reading uncertainty as where the fragile part is can be more useful than seeking a single guaranteed outcome. Some forecast phrases sound intimidating until they are treated as compact physical shorthand. Frontal passage means the boundary crosses the area, so the practical question becomes what changes immediately afterward? Wind direction, temperature, humidity, or the character of precipitation? An upper-level disturbance means lift is being added from higher levels, which can explain clouds or showers even when the surface picture is subtle. Temperatures near 925 millibars refer to air roughly 3,000 feet up, sampled high enough to reduce some surface quirks, but low enough to still speak to how the lower atmosphere is likely to behave. Those phrases are technical, but they function as pointers toward the next few hours at the ground. A mid-March National Weather Service Boston and Norton forecast discussion illustrates how that translation works in practice. Forecasters described scattered diurnal showers and thunderstorms with a low severe risk, then emphasized timing around frontal passage. They noted that as 925 millibar temperatures dropped to -5 to -9 degrees Celsius, the air mass would be unseasonably cold for mid-March, and they also discussed wind chills in the mid-teens to mid-20s above zero in the interior higher terrain. For a general listener, the key meaning is straightforward. After the front arrives, the lower atmosphere behind it is colder than the calendar suggests, and wind makes exposed conditions feel harsher than a single thermometer reading implies. The numbers are not decorative, because they explain why the forecast uses emphatic language about the change. Wind chill language does the same job whenever wind and temperature combine into exposure. In higher terrain, shelter is thinner and winds can be stronger, so felt cold matters as much as eye level temperature. When a forecast discussion highlights wind chills in the teens or 20s above zero, it is communicating that the air will pull heat from exposed skin faster than the thermometer alone suggests. Behind this daily reading sits a forecasting system that has both old roots and modern machinery. Early forecasters relied on observations from across regions, then used synoptic patterns to infer what was likely to move next. Today, the core engine is numerical weather prediction, where equations describing atmospheric motion, heat, moisture, and pressure are advanced forward in time using computer models. Those models start from an estimated current state of the atmosphere, produced by data assimilation, which blends new observations with the previous forecast state. Surface stations measure temperature, pressure, wind, and humidity. Weather balloons sample the vertical atmosphere. Aircraft contribute observations aloft, and radar and satellites capture precipitation structure and atmospheric patterns over areas with fewer direct measurements. The output is not a single prophecy, but a time-sliced estimate of what the atmosphere will do next, given what it can observe now. Forecast guidance updates because the atmosphere is being remeasured in cycles. New observations arrive, the starting point is refined, and subsequent model runs adjust features such as low tracks, front timing, and the depth of cold air near the coast. For Boston, where small coastal track changes can shift the rain-snow line by many miles, these refinements can matter as much for everyday plans as any headline. Ensembles add a further layer by running many variations with slightly different initial conditions or model assumptions. When those runs cluster tightly, the range of plausible outcomes narrows and confidence rises. When the runs spread, uncertainty remains visible in the guidance and often shows up in scenario-based language and probabilities instead of a single hard-edged guarantee. Within the United States, the NOAA Weather Program Office supports work that improves model physics, ensemble prediction systems, and decision support tools that help translate raw guidance into information emergency managers and broadcasters can use. That matters for New England because coastal storms, winter mixing, and heavy rain events depend on model details that must represent clouds, snow bands, ocean exchange, and surface temperatures well. Better physics shapes how those processes are simulated, and better decision tools shape how clearly those simulations become a usable forecast method. Artificial intelligence enters this pipeline as a complement rather than a replacement. A World Meteorological Organization article described AI systems being used to post-process raw model output, downscale broader forecasts to local scales, and generate tailored products for sectors such as energy, agriculture, and disaster management. In practical terms, these systems can improve local temperature guidance, refine precipitation intensity, and correct recurring biases in how a model behaves in specific places like coastal Massachusetts. At the same time, the dependence on high-quality training data and the need for careful human oversight remain central, which is why physical interpretation and forecasting expertise are still key to turning output into a coherent explanation. That is also where trust becomes part of the communication problem. Research on probability forecasts has shown that people can interpret precipitation percentages in different ways. And experimental work on uncertainty communication suggests that how people react depends on whether uncertainty aligns with or contradicts what they already expect. Weather offers familiar examples of both. A damp northeast wind and low clouds can match local memory, so a drizzle and chill forecast feels believable. A marginal snow chance that is stronger inland but weaker on the Cape can feel unsatisfying to someone who wants a simple yes or no. In practice, uncertainty has to be carried honestly, because the atmosphere does not make room for certainty where the physics allows multiple plausible paths. That is also why clearer public products matter, as forecast offices adopt formats that emphasize key messages, hazards, and impacts. The goal is not to drain the science out of the forecast. It is to connect the science to the questions people naturally ask. What is driving today? When does it change? How sharp is the shift? Which places are most sensitive? And what the uncertainty actually affects? When those meanings are presented plainly, technical phrases become less mysterious and probabilities become easier to use. A simple routine survives all of the technology. Identify the driver of the day. Track pressure as it signals whether the atmosphere is settling or gearing up. Locate the front and translate it into a timeline. Check whether moisture supply matches the lift mechanism. Time the change relative to the local clock. Then compare the explanation with the sky, cloud evolution, wind shifts, temperature trends, and how the air feels where the forecast is being tested. Over a few days, the habit turns weather language into something understood rather than merely received, and the explanations begin to predict which parts are likely to hold up and which parts are fragile. That is the work of good forecast reading. High pressure is settling in, a front is setting the pivot, and a low pressure system is organizing lift and moisture into something that can affect the ground. An upper-level disturbance is enough to bring scattered afternoon storms without turning the whole day into a washout. A marginal winter track leaves the coast uncertain because the temperature structure is exquisitely sensitive. In the end, the atmosphere verifies or challenges the chain of reasoning, and a miss still teaches what link in the sequence was the most variable. The explanation is tested, not just consumed. And as the days change, the same routine helps you see which pieces confirm the storyline and which ones quietly force the forecast onto a new path. Suggested further reading. If you'd like to keep going, the National Weather Service's Forecast Glossary, along with the Boston or Dorton Forecast Discussions, is the best everyday companion. The glossary translates the jargon, and the discussions show how forecasters think through fronts, timing, confidence, snow lines, wind, and the small details that turn a model into a local forecast. For the seasonal picture, NOAA's Climate Prediction Center outlooks are especially useful. They explain terms like equal chances, above normal, and below normal. And they show how La Niña, storm tracks, and regional climate patterns shape the odds without pretending to promise a single outcome. If Boston storms are your focus, NOAA and National Weather Service explainers on nor'easters, winter storms, and coastal flooding give a clear, durable account of why East Coast lows can mean snow in one neighborhood, rain in another, and damaging wind or surf along the coast. For a very local lens, the Blue Hill Observatory and Science Center's weather outlooks are worth following. They are a good bridge between big-picture meteorology and Boston-area reality, especially when you want to see how forecasters judge the rain-snow line, coastal uncertainty, and the difference a few miles can make. And if you're curious about the tools behind modern forecasting, the World Meteorological Organization and NOAA's Weather Program Office both have accessible explainers on ensembles, data assimilation, and the growing role of AI, which help show why today's forecasts are less about a single answer and more about a carefully tested range of possibilities. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.